Sports Radio 1290. CFRW, Winnipeg. All sports.
Sidney Crosby, the golden goal!
All the time. Sports Radio 1290 presents the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 2 hours of in-depth analysis, insight, and opinion into Canada's game. Now, here's Drew, Richard, and Ezra.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at sportsradio1290.com, good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm the host of this fine program, Drew Mundell, joined in studio by my good friends Richard Pollock, Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Tim is behind the computers over there doing his magic. Michael Remus is in the other room operating the R desk. And you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. Jam-packed 2 hours coming ahead for you. Coming up in about 15 minutes' time from sportsbusinessnews.com, Howard Bloom will be joining us to discuss the potential sale of the Maple Leaf Sports and Entertainment from the Ontario Teachers to Rogers Communication. Coming up at 11 o'clock from the Denver Post, Adrian Dater to discuss the couple of trades that the Colorado Avalanche made this week. He's going to be joining us live from Tampa Bay, Florida, where the Avs are on the road. Richard, Ezra, good morning to both of you.
Drew, great to be here.
Hey now, Drew.
Hey now.
Good use of hey now. If you want to follow along with the show, get in touch with us on Twitter, at Illegal Curve. You can send us your tweets, anything that you have on your mind in the hockey world. If you want to join in on the interactive chat, go to www.illegalcurve.com. That's where Michael Remus is operating the live chat. He'll be there sending out all the links and stories and commentary that we talk about here on the air. So it's a good way for you to get interactive and enjoy the show. And, of course, you can always drop us an email, drew@illegalcurve.com. Guys, let's start with the recap from Friday night in the NHL. It was a sort of relatively quiet night. Six games in the NHL on Friday night. Friday nights usually are, of course, leading into the big Saturday. Let's start in New York. The Rangers played the Islanders. What once was a fantastic rivalry is now obviously less so because the Islanders suck. The Islanders lost to the Rangers 2-0. Any commentary regarding the game from either of you?
You know, Rangers winning games that they need to win, Drew. And this is a team that Ezra and I both talked about quite glowingly in terms of their work ethic and their ability to make, put a fair amount together, considering there's a lack of talent on offense there. Beating the Islanders are an awful team, and they're borderline unwatchable now, though, the Islanders. So the Rangers beat them 6-5 the first half of the home and home. Yep. They beat them 2-0 yesterday.
For the same reason, we'll look at it because they're content providers. At the same time, Larry Tenenbaum, of course, owns 20%, and he has first right of refusal now. I don't know how much disposable income Mr. Tenenbaum has, but I do know that Larry can pick up the phone and put together a consortium of people that can probably come up with the $1.5 billion. The other name to look at is Jim Vasily. Despite the fact that Jim Vasily went about his bid for the Phoenix Coyotes every possible wrong way, it's well worth remembering that BlackBerry was a sponsor for both the All-Star Game and the Stanley Cup playoffs. So clearly the NHL isn't adverse to doing business with Jim Vasily if they're accepting his company, BlackBerry, as a major sponsor for their marquee events.
Now, Jim Vasily, that's interesting, Howard. I mean, Jim Vasily having control of probably the,
Greater Toronto area, no better property than the Maple Leafs. But go back to the rationale that Rogers has, and I believe if they get involved, Bell Globe Media would have. It's all about putting it on a mobile phone device. Last time I checked, a lot of BlackBerries out there, probably more BlackBerries in Canada than anything else. And if you can create exclusive content that is only available on BlackBerry phones, in other words, you have to buy a BlackBerry phone, you're not going to buy an iPhone or whatever, and you're a Maple Leaf fan, and that's good business for BlackBerry, the company. So, no, I think it makes perfect sense. And, look, I was extremely critical of Jim Vasily when I worked with CTV on covering this story.
Right.
I was one of the most critical people of Vasily and his behavior at the time. But I said at the end of the saga, and I'll say it now, if Jim Vasily were to keep quiet and behave over the next year or two, then the NHL would look at him again, because you can't afford to ignore a billionaire who has a strong interest in hockey if you're the National Hockey League with so many floundering financially franchises.
Well, we'll talk about that in a second, but it seems to me that, you know, Balsillie could be, and in a positive way, similar to how Mark Cuban's been in the NBA. I mean, he can be seen as a positive influence, a guy with a ton of money, and he promotes the game, and he's very passionate about it, and he markets the team, you know, through the avenues, like similar Mark Cuban has HDNet and all the computer stuff that he has, and as you just said, the BlackBerry option seems like it'd be pretty logical if Bettman's willing to allow him into the fraternity.
Well, you mentioned Mark Cuban, and having actually talked to Mark Cuban several times, not in the last 5-6 years, but certainly as he was buying the Mavericks in his first few years with the Mavericks, I look at Mark Cuban's ownership a lot like George Steinbrenner when Steinbrenner owned the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Steinbrenner was a lot better owner in the second half
yep.
of his years as owner. Cuban is still maturing. Whether he's been much, much better the last couple years, but his shenanigans with the chasing on the court,
yep.
with the Dairy Queen thing, those aren't good for the image of any league. And I think that quietly Cuban learned from his lessons. It's becoming a much more mature owner now. But yes, sports leagues need mature owners who have a passion for the game. And Mark Cuban has that for basketball, and I'm certain. But there have been suggestions that Mark Cuban would buy the Dallas Stars. I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Right.
If you know anything about Mark Cuban, he's not going to buy a franchise that competes directly in the same season with the Dallas Mavericks. What he wants control of is the American Airlines Center. That makes the most amount of sense. But so you're not going to see Cuban in the NHL, but Basile in the NHL, oh, yeah, I think you'll see that eventually.
When news came out of, you know, Toronto and New York that Rogers might be buying the Toronto Maple Leafs, the story was quickly denied, in the Globe and Mail and other sources. But how likely do you think that this deal is to go through?
Well, I think eventually, again, they're going to go ahead and sell their these guys aren't in the business of winning Stanley Cups. I was on with a bunch of radio stations in Southern Ontario when the story broke, and the question I got asked then, and the question I'm always asked, is when are the Leafs going to win a Stanley Cup? This isn't going to bring the Leafs any closer to winning a Stanley Cup. This was all about content.
Mm-hmm.
If they can reach a deal that works for the Ontario Teachers' Pension Fund, they'll make it work. But again, let's be very clear. The Ontario Teachers' Pension Fund don't care if the Maple Leafs win the Stanley Cup.
Right,
great
right.
if they do. Great if they don't. Rogers, well, it'd be nice if they won a Stanley Cup. But it'd be nice if the Raptors were a better team. But they need content for all their sports properties.
Right.
And they want to move ahead of TSN. Anybody thinks that TSN and Bell Globe Media are going to take this lying down. So do I think the deal will get done eventually? Yes. Do I think it'll get done tomorrow? By the way, no. You know what? None of this was new news. This has been out there for the longest time. And with the Ontario Teachers' Pension Fund denying it yesterday, I guess you'd have to question whether or not it was a story to begin with.
You've mentioned that this is really just all about content for the interested parties. You know, if the bidding war develops here, and you've got a bidding war, you have Rogers on one side and you have CTV Globe Media on the other side, is there any way that CBC can hold on to Hockey Night in Canada, after this is all said and done, when you have, really big networks starting to bid for the national hockey package?
Well, that's a very good question, but there's something that people have failed to understand. A lot of the failure to understand has come out of Toronto, not surprisingly. Toronto believing that they're the center of the known universe, or at least the Canadian universe. There was that WikiLeaks report about how Canadians feel inferior. I think, unfortunately, Toronto feels they're superior to the rest of us. And certain words you can't say on radio, but I don't have a lot of love for Toronto. That said, let's be honest about a couple things. First of all, each of the Canadian franchises owns broadcast territorial rights. In other words, let me give you an example. Winnipeg will come back into the NHL, right? If the Winnipeg Jets, and I would like to see them rename the team the Winnipeg Jets, are playing at home on a Saturday night, they're not going to be showing a Leaf game if the Jets are playing, because the Jets own the regional rights. So now Hockey Night in Canada can supersede it that case. But you're not going to be able to see Sportsnet go ahead and effectively override the regional broadcast rights. So no, could you see all of the NHL on cable television? That would be a bad move, by the way. In other words, you could see the games on national cable TV. I don't think that's a very good idea. What I would like to see is what the original deal that the Montreal Canadiens had with RDS. That move, and remember, we're talking the Montreal Canadiens, and obviously we're primarily the Francophone rights are in Quebec, although there's a Francophone community outside of Quebec and obviously in Winnipeg. But that said, the original deal had the Saturday night games on Radio-Canada and all of the games on RDS. Not sure how Radio-Canada managed to screw that up so badly, but it's hard to imagine that the death of Hockey Night in Canada is around the corner. I don't think that would be good for the hockey. And by the way, all you would need is some World War II veteran who can't afford cable TV, who's got the rabbit ears up and the steel wool on the end of the rabbit ears so he can get his Hockey Night in Canada. All you need is that picture on the cover of the Globe and Mail, and a picture would speak more than 1,000 words.
We're joined on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show by Howard Bloom of Sports Business News.
Howard, you mentioned Winnipeg. Obviously, we're based in Winnipeg. We're supportive of the team coming back here. Can you give us a couple of reasons why the NHL would work in Winnipeg and maybe how soon you think it will return?
I'll tell you what. I still can't believe that the fiasco in Phoenix, the debacle in Phoenix continues. Are they really going to have a deal in place by the end of this month? No. I mean, it would be a miracle. Clearly, whatever, what's in Phoenix, they're throwing spaghetti against the wall, and whatever sticks, or at least eventually sticks, they hope will own it. NHL's never going to work in Phoenix. Rocket Richard can rise from the dead, and he could play for Phoenix, and no one would go see games there, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a stupid, asinine move on the part of the NHL. At the time hockey left Winnipeg, we had a low Canadian dollar.
Right.
And come on, they couldn't play in that dilapidated arena in Winnipeg. Now, you could argue that for whatever reason, they forgot to include 2,000 seats in the Winnipeg, in the current
MTS Center,
facility in Winnipeg. But that said, if the Jets should be coming back to where they belong in Winnipeg. If not, we know that teams in trouble in Atlanta. If not, we know both Florida teams are in trouble. There are a lot of NHL teams in trouble, and Winnipeg is a traditional hockey market. Here's the fundamental issue for the National Hockey League. As patently absurd as it may appear, they move teams from traditional hockey markets, Winnipeg, Quebec City, and Hartford, to non-traditional hockey markets. That doesn't make any sense on any level. It's like moving Major League Baseball teams into Canada. I mean, with all due respect to the Winnipeg Goldeyes team, which has been an anomaly in terms of success, baseball hasn't worked in Canada. It would be like moving NBA franchises into this country.
Right.
I mean, just think about it. It doesn't make any sense. So, look, I have maintained for years that Winnipeg will get back in the NHL, and shame on the NHL for it not happening already. It's an embarrassment to the league, and it really shows that I do have a lot of respect for Gary Bettman, but not in terms of how he's handled the situation in Phoenix.
Obviously, a new arena is going to factor into this big time, but what do you think about Quebec City and their chances of, getting a franchise back?
Well, I don't believe that the government in our country, I don't believe there's any appetite in this country for the government, the federal government, to fund arenas. And the federal government won't be funding any arena in Quebec City. The telltale sign of that was a few weeks ago. The feds withdrew their support for Expo 2017.
Sure, in Edmonton.
But before you say, what does one have to do with the other? Well, the feds certainly sent a message that they're not going to support projects like that. That said, I do think they'll find a way to build an arena in Quebec City. And hey, you know, I've seen dozens of games in Quebec City, including Montreal and Les Nordiques. Those were unbelievable games, amazing sports experiences. It's a hockey town, and the Colisée doesn't work. It wasn't Marcel Auguste's fault, although a lot of people point the finger at Marcel. That said, yeah, I think you'll see. I'm sure as soon as they get an arena built, you'll see, again, you can try to move an expansion franchise into there, but it makes much more sense, like with Winnipeg, to move one of the NHL franchises in the warm weather climates that's hemorrhaging red ink each and every game.
Howard Bloom of Sports Business News, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Legal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for the opportunity. Hope to be able to do it again. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much. Interesting comments. Let's go to break. We're going to actually we'll talk about the comments. We're going to come back and talk about the Forbes magazine articles, you know, as the NHL value franchise is worth. You know, it's all going to factor in. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290.
Really great hockey talk. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on Sports Radio 1290.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 10:35 in the morning here on Saturday morning. He's giving me the finger for it, is he?
I'm not giving you the finger, I'm just...
It's
my boy, so just let her
it's Black Keys, right?
Oh, you're telling producer Tim to keep the Black Keys
song. By the way,
I
converted Richie into a hardcore Black Keys fan, too.
Really?
I mean, they're unreal. They're unreal.
Yeah, the new CD's
They're the best band out there right now.
Really?
Yeah, there's only two of them.
That's a bold statement. He's a big fan.
There's two of them, but they now when they play live, there's five guys. They brought like a touring band with them.
Really?
So, you know, on the Brothers album, their last album, they brought in
Well, welcome back to the Legal Curve Hockey Show and Black Keys Fan Appreciation Night. Anyways, you know, Forbes magazine came out with their standard article. They do it about once a year, talking about the values of the NHL franchises.
And every year, before we even get started, every year the NHL, which I don't blame them for, says, you know, they don't have access to all the right information. And so they literally put out the same press release every year.
They just change the date. Sometimes they don't even change the date.
Yeah, you know? So
I mean, to no one's surprise, the Toronto Maple Leafs remained number one value, coming in at $505 million.
Just to quickly mention, to qualify, you know, the interview beforehand, if you weren't aware, when they're talking about buying the Maple Leafs, Maple Leaf Sports Entertainment includes the Marlies, the Maple Leafs, Toronto FC, which is a soccer franchise. And then the Raptors.
I was going to say football, like football.
Football, yeah. So and then the Raptors. So it's more than just the Leafs. So that's
also,
why.
It doesn't include the Air Canada Center?
Yes, it does. It includes this.
And it includes
TV stations,
they have
Raptors,
the TV stations, and there's a condo development.
Yeah.
It almost seems like $1.3 billion.
It's not enough.
Well, 1.5 is a new rumor.
1.3, 1.5.
When you talk about are the Raptors included in that?
Yeah.
So when you're talking about the Raptors, the Leafs, Toronto FC, the arena, the Rogers Center. No, sorry, not the Rogers Center. Air Canada Center, sorry.
There's property involved.
I mean, that
TV stations involved.
You might think
involved.
That it might be more like $3 or $4 billion.
It includes the fan also, doesn't it? I think so.
No.
That's I'm going to have to check on that. I thought it did. But you're getting a lot of properties for $1.3 million.
You should put a bid in.
I'm trying to put it together. I'm in touch with Larry Tannenbaum. We're trying to work the numbers out.
Take out the breakfast money. Take out the omelet money.
The omelet money is a lot of money. You know, that's about $8 a day times 365 days a year. That's a lot of omelet.
Drew, I found a new place where you can get a $2 breakfast in Winnipeg. I forget the name of the place, but
the Salvation Army.
No, it's. Let's just move on.
Okay. So anyways, the Leafs, of course, are number one in the NHL at $505 million. The teams that you would think are up at the top are at the top. You know, the Rangers, $461 million, the Canadiens at $408 million, the Bruins, the Flyers, the Blackhawks, the Canucks, you know, all, you know, the Canucks actually have had a significant increase, double-digit increase.
Now, I think Dallas is 10, right?
Let me pull it up.
And Dallas is 10, and I think one of the reasons I caught me off guard, you know, Dallas is 10, this team's in bankruptcy, nobody will buy them. But, and Howard just alluded to it, Howard Bloom of the Sports Business News last segment alluded to the fact that Hicks owns the building, I believe. So, and the Cuban wants control of that. So because Hicks owns the building, obviously the value of the franchise increases.
Well, I mean, it really, it seems like it boils down to the building. You have to own your building to have any chance of making solid revenue.
If you remember back in, you know, a couple of years ago, the Toronto Blue Jays, before being purchased by Rogers,
mm-hmm.
they had a different owner for the building and different owner for the franchise.
Didn't the German beer company still own the building?
That's right, Interbrew. And they couldn't, yeah. and what happened was they couldn't make any money off of it. So, it's a, yeah, you're absolutely right, Drew.
And then it factors into what's happening.
Same problem with Winnipeg with the
Jets. Of course. And it's the same thing that's happening with the Oilers right now. The team is owned by Northlands,
right.
which is really the city.
The arena.
Yeah. The arena is owned by Northlands.
Yeah. Daryl Cates owns
the team, and he's saying, look, I can't possibly make any... I mean, the team only brings in so much revenue. You get the team for 82 games, 82 nights a year. That's where you're making your revenue. And because the other
In addition to television
playoffs.
Revenue and, well, you know,
there's the
merchandise.
There's
the
extras.
I don't think they're
small percentage, though, Drew, you're right.
Well, I mean,
The NHL is the most gate-driven league that there is out there. Mm-hmm. And that's why...
But you can supplement the gate-driven aspect of it with owning your own arena. That's why here in Winnipeg, the thing that makes the world a difference is, look, you have one of the top five busiest arenas in North America. When the Jets aren't playing in the middle of the summer, the team is still going to be generating revenue because, you know, Michael Flatley and the Irish Dancers are coming to town or whatever
Michael
it is.
Michael Flatley, so. Can we get tickets?
I have to, and they're going fast. I'm not sure when the pre-sale is.
I thought we were going to Streetheart. Come on, man.
Are they playing at the arena?
McPhillips Street Casino, I think. I don't know.
Okay. Nice job. It's not called McPhillips Street Casino anymore.
Oh,
it's just McPhillips Station Casino because they don't want you to know that you're on McPhillips.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or that McPhillips is a street, apparently. I'm not 100% sure what their logic
is. They're going to have to start taking ATMs out of casinos if they actually want to, you know.
Whoa, but Ezzy, they're not actually in the casinos. They're in the hotel adjacent to the casinos. The splitting
Drew
of the hairs is
politics.
The splitting of the hairs is something.
Drew,
can we get back to the Forbes
Drew,
magazine?
You were at the Shooting Star Casino last weekend, weren't you, in Manoman, Minnesota?
I was performing there, actually. I have a one-man show. I am the backup singer for the Black Keys. See, it's all coming together.
Oh.
Yeah, see how it all ties together there?
You know.
Not a surprise, the last two teams in terms of value are the Phoenix Coyotes and the Atlanta Thrashers, the teams we've spoken about most often.
Islanders, too, are, I think, third lowest.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Islanders are, I think, 27th.
Yeah, Islanders are down
28th,
there.
Sorry.
Yeah.
True, those guys. There's no real surprises. I mean, I wasn't really surprised by any. And Dallas, but the arena factor comes in. Were you surprised by any of the 30 there? I really wasn't.
No, it's exactly the same as should be every year. There's nobody making a huge jump, and there's nobody making a huge dive.
The general manager's article is
what we're going to talk about next. Also, what Forbes did is they ranked the best general managers by the buck.
Okay, by the way, can we just talk about the fact that, like, you know, Forbes, pretty prestigious business magazine. This article by, you know, ranking general managers by the buck and points.
Garbage.
Isn't exactly what you call strenuous exercise.
I thought it was a garbage article.
Well, I mean, the first few, you're like, okay, that makes some sense.
You know, David Poile, you know, the Predators always at the top, you know, always in the playoffs lately. You know, we know that they're not a big market franchise. They don't have a lot of revenue.
Darcy Regier,
same thing with Buffalo. You know, it's logical.
Then he dropped Don Waddell on us.
What? When he dropped Don Waddell, that's when the article lost all credibility.
Yeah.
Nobody in the hockey world would think, Don Waddell, there's a guy who's doing a hell of a good job as a general manager for the dollar.
And they termed it as a promotion. And if you read the article, you know, to the non-hockey fan, they say, you know, Don Waddell did a great job, bang for his buck, he got a promotion to president. No, the team thought maybe he'd be better served up top because he could do a good job promoting the game. They brought in a real, real good hockey guy in Rick Dudley. Now, I'm not saying Don Waddell's not a good hockey guy, just it didn't work for him there. And Rick Dudley came in, and Rick Dudley, hey, Dustin Byfuglien, Andrew Ladd, Brent Sopel, a bunch of those guys, all brought in by Rick Dudley. Hey, they're all performing.
Yeah, I mean, I was with them for a while, you know. Started the article, David Poile, then Doug Wilson of San Jose.
Yeah,
you know,
of course.
Always top.
He's number
teams.
One in terms of that. Well, Kenny Holland's number one in terms of that. Then Dougie Wilson.
Right.
Poile and Regier are in the next group.
Kenny Holland was ranked number three. And what they did is they took total points over the last 5 years in the regular season.
Yeah.
And then they gave bonus points for every round that you advance in the playoffs. You make the playoffs, you have 5 bonus points. You go to the second round, you get 10. And then they divided it by the amount of your payroll has been in the last 5 years.
Guys, there's two things I want to say about this. First off, I think, as far as the Thrashers organization goes, I think they deserve a lot of credit for the Kovalchuk trade because I haven't even finished one thing here. You're already interrupting my one thing.
What do you like about the trade?
I like the fact that they're getting a lot out of the players they acquired, and the Devils aren't getting. They got rid of. I think Kovalchuk is a cancerous player.
Okay, now let me.
I think Kovalchuk is a bad. It was a bad fit for New Jersey, and I think they got rid of him, and they got assets now that they can use. I just want to say one other thing.
Okay.
And I think as far as this goes, I don't know, as far as the Forbes article goes, I don't know what the point of monetizing GMs is. I mean, they have their value. They get salaries, but sorry.
Let Richie respond to you now.
Okay, well,
Drew, you don't have to mediate.
Kovalchuk deal. What you had here?
Actually, that's my job.
Patrice Cormier.
You're the host, not me.
You know, criminal charges notwithstanding. I think those are already gone now.
I think they dealt
Patrice
with
Cormier, Nicholas Bjerkfors, who, by the way, Eric DeHatch pointed out in his news and notes, has the same amount of goals as Kovalchuk since the trade, 14 each.
Yeah.
Bjerkfors, Oduya, who's a good, you know, fourth defenseman who can move around a bit, move the puck a bit. So Oduya, Bjerkfors, Cormier, and I believe it was
a draft pick. Yeah, first round pick. Yep.
Now, that's a good haul. But my point was, and it was,
because Kovalchuk wanted to go anyways.
At that time,
he didn't want to stay there.
Let him finish.
But why not trade him a year before? You weren't going anywhere. You don't need a guy like that in your team. You should have recognized that after 9 years or 8 years.
Yep.
Why not make the trade earlier? You would have got even more for him.
Also, keep in mind, I mean, the Thrashers tried to sign him. It's not like this was like a
deal. And they offered him $100 million.
Exactly. This isn't like they had some fantastic foresight into this deal here. All they did here is they went to a guy, they offered him $100 million, and he said no. I don't want your $100 million. What are they going to do? Hold on to him until he's an unrestricted free agent? There's no incredible foresight or general manager, you know, logic involved here. It's an obvious trade you have to make.
There was other obvious trades. Quickly before we go into break here, Maxim Afanaganov, great signing last year for I think $600,000. He was terrific all year. At the trade deadline, you're not going anywhere. You trade him. And then he doesn't sign. He played the rest of the year there. They didn't re-sign him. And now he's not even in the NHL. Get something. Get a fourth-round pick for him. You're not going anywhere.
No. I mean, nobody in the hockey world is sitting around saying, Don Waddell, what a fabulous job he's done. Might be a nice guy. You know, made the Kovalchuk trade, which was sitting in front of him, obvious that you have to make.
Some credit. I mean, there's some guy picks it. Okay, but I'm just saying he doesn't deserve to be. And that list loses its credibility when they throw out guys like that.
Yeah. I mean, it's just that simple. Exactly. Anybody with a hockey mind knows that he's not a top five general manager.
There's a big advantage there if you have a Lopez payroll. But anyway.
That's right. I mean, look, number 9 in this list, Garth Snow. And we're going to talk about Garth Snow as a general manager later on.
The article, by the way. I didn't get to 10 because I closed the article at 9.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, he got Robbie Shrimp in New York, okay? That was a great move.
Okay, easy.
That was his best move. That was his best move.
I know it's your boy. Easy.
It's my boy.
I know it's your boy. That's what I'm saying. Okay, let's go to break.
We tweet all the time.
Let's go to break. When we come back, NHL News and Notes. You're listening to the Legal Curve Hockey Show here on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to Sports Radio 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning. It's time for NHL News and Notes, where we're going to go around the league, talk about the top stories in the NHL right now. Let's start with what happened in Ottawa this past week, the return of Danny Heatley. This has been sort of anticlimactic to me. You know, Heatley, of course, demanded the trade out of Ottawa after they rescued him from Ottawa. You know, then he had the nerve to refuse to waive his no trade clause to Edmonton. Is this just a case of their time has healed the wound to some extent, and that's why the passion wasn't what you would expect, with a guy who's betrayed a team returning to a franchise?
Well, LeBron James wasn't very nice about leaving Cleveland, and I really don't care for LeBron James, but Danny Heatley was worse. Under contract, demanded trade, then got a trade, then didn't even go where he was traded. And he came back, and this is a team that took him on when he needed a fresh start in Atlanta after he accidentally killed one of his best friends in a car accident. And this is a guy demanding a trade and saying where he has to go. I'll tell you one thing about Danny Heatley. I mean, there's not much to like about him.
Richie, Danny Heatley is arguably one of the greatest goal scorers we've seen in the last 10 years in the NHL. He was very instrumental in helping Canada at the 2010 Olympics.
Not very instrumental,
But let's be honest, he hung the city of Ottawa out to dry.
Yeah, absolutely.
He deserted the city of Ottawa, and I know that if you look at Danny Heatley's numbers, he put up the 100 triple digit points after coming out of the lockout. Heatley, Alfredson, and Spezza were all on fire, and when Corey Kluston came in, he wasn't happy, and his numbers went down. But the city of Ottawa and the Senators had a lot invested in Heatley. We talked about this when we first started this radio show, almost 2 years ago. But the Ottawa Senators fans have every right to boo him
They couldn't even sell out the game.
Yeah, I know they didn't sell out.
That's my point, is that they have every right to boo him, jeer him, yell at him, scream at him, everything. Sell out the game if
maybe,
it means
maybe
so much
the
to
Ottawa
you.
Fans despise him that much that those
nonsense.
Fans that would have
nonsense,
bought those
nonsense,
tickets.
Nonsense. I lived in Ottawa for I lived in Ottawa for three years. I'm not the least bit surprised that they couldn't sell out the game. That's a front-running city. There's nobody, so very few people are from Ottawa that have the passion of being a Senators fan, or like they do in Montreal, or like they do in Toronto. It's a corporate city. I'm not surprised that rude welcome he got was lukewarm.
I want to talk a little bit about the fans. I mean, once again, I feel that, you know, I've watched a game in Ottawa before. They had a lot of success, you know, earlier on, before the lockout. But I had a bit of an issue with the fans throwing jerseys on the ice.
I thought that's great. I guess we're really arguing
a lot today. No, I'm just kidding. But this is the reason why, Richie, that I didn't like it. I think it's a waste of a jersey. It's a $200 jersey.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, what are you going to do? Wear a Heathley jersey?
Well, this is the thing, guys. I mean, you know,
sell it on Kijiji.
For
Bill,
nothing.
Bill Simmons,
burn it.
Bill Simmons wrote a good article on ESPN about how, you know, fans buy your jerseys, they pay for the tickets, they buy the TV packages, they buy everything. And all they're asking for is for you to try hard and give them a little bit of respect back. And Danny Heatley didn't hold up his end of the bargain. I mean, does anybody in that Ottawa team actually want to go to war with Danny Heatley now?
No, I have no problem with the senator with the fan,
shape,
with the fans though. Throwing their jerseys on the ice. Look, a jersey is never going to injure somebody.
It's not the issue, Drew.
I know.
I'm sort of more so talking about the organization itself. And what happened was he put him in such a bind that the trade they did it, they consummated it at the time, I didn't think it was that bad of a trade. I'll go on the record saying that. And, you know, Milan Mihailuk's knee has been, both knees have been had surgery like 30 times. And they've, you know, had bad luck that way. Heatley's living in anonymity in San Jose with one newspaper covering him on a daily basis, playing shotgun to Joe Thornton, and living the high life.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Ottawa did the best out of a bad situation, but it took a lot of chutzpah for Danny Heatley to then reject, you know, demand a trade, refuse to waive his no trade clause, and refuse to go to Edmonton.
He alienated two cities in one fell swoop.
Well, I mean.
And imagine if the trade went through. You know, Penner, Smead, and Cogliano would be a better haul than they got.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a guy with a lot of chutzpah, but, I just say if you're a Senators fan, sell out the game.
Hold on, I thought the Oilers had a plan to rebuild the whole time.
Yeah, that's exactly it. They were tanking on purpose. The Los Angeles Kings, speaking about trades, were rumored to be on the verge any second now of acquiring Marco Sturm from the Boston Bruins. That trade seems to have fallen apart lately. Sturm is on the injured list.
Won't this trade go through when he gets healthy, though?
The details of the trade is that they asked Marco Sturm to waive his no-trade clause overnight. He thought about it, came back to Peter Chiarelli, said he'd waive the no-trade clause, and the trade didn't go through. Now, last week you asked the question, Drew, which Boston Bruins most likely to go, and I had Marco Sturm, but I said, you know, he's injured. So, you know, if you're LA, first of all, why are you trading for an injured player now?
You're trading. They were trading nothing for him. They were trading a conditional draft pick.
True, but why trade for an injured? We know you don't know what it's.
Richie, I mean, the only thing I can think of is the Kings have been struggling. We're struggling.
But
up
he wasn't
going to
be on the ice
immediately, and you haven't seen him skate, and you're taking on his salary. Why you can't? You know, I understand he goes on the injured, so that doesn't go against the cap. But you're still paying the salary.
Dean Lombardi might have seen something that he didn't like. That's the only thing I can think of. But that, I agree with you.
I think
I mean,
there
you're
was also
a draft
fear
pick,
that they were going to wait. They were going to put him on waivers, and the Kings wouldn't be able to get him.
Is Marco Sturm that important? I mean, he's better than average, but is he that important?
He hasn't played a game. You're right, though. He hasn't played a single game this year.
I know. I mean, his injury, and that's what scuttled the trade, is that obviously the Kings thought he was expected to return to the lineup, I think, in the next couple weeks. And yeah. I guess the Kings saw something there that make them think he's not going to return for longer than that.
Is this one of those situations where he didn't pass a physical, or what is
no,
it?
No, he never even came to that, I don't think. Oh. I think he just they saw something. They exchanged medical reports, and there was something there that raised a red flag for the Kings. Now they could very well revisit this trade, you know, a couple months from now or a couple weeks from now, whenever Sturm is back and healthy.
Because Savard is back,
Sturm
so they have to move somebody when Sturm
IR,
comes back.
They made the trade. They traded Hunwick, so that cleared up some cap space for them for Savard.
Sturm makes 3.5 this year. Ryder makes 4. They're both on last year's of deals. I realize
Ryder's been playing better lately.
He has, and Sturm can kill penalties. I'm not sure if they're willing to trade Ryder, but if I was LA, I'd want a little bit more of a sniper, to be honest with you.
Well,
and a guy who's a little bit better of a health track record, right?
Yeah. The health is obviously the red flag there right now. That's what's affecting everything. Speaking of health, Pierre-Marc Bouchard returned to the NHL after a 14-month layoff due to concussions. I mean,
scored last night.
I know he scored last night for the Wild. If you're out for 14 months with a concussion, I think it has to change the way you play the game.
100%. I totally agree with you, Drew. I think it has to change the way you play the game. Great story, though. This guy persevered. He could have packed it in. He loves hockey. He's sitting around he had concussion problems before last year. Obviously, you know, so many concussions that he's had. Very difficult. But give him, you know, it's a great story. Give him, you know, I don't know how, long he'll be able to play, hopefully a very long time, but this is a great story to see him come out.
Right, and he sat out for a year, and obviously he took it very seriously, and I think this is the new way to deal with a concussion in the NHL,
yep.
Right?
Well, you know what the part about the concussions that really scares me, and Mark Savard spoke about it very honestly before his return, apparently the depression that comes with it, that's frightening to me. It's one thing if you know, obviously it's bad if you get a concussion and your head hurts and everything else and you're off kilter, but it's doing things psychologically to people now, and it's very frightening, it's in the back of my mind. If I'm getting a concussion and you're that much susceptible to getting a second concussion, what's it going to do? We see in the NFL all these stories of people who've
you have to be
died as a result of the brain traumas they've received.
You have to be right out of your mind to play in the NFL.
I was having that conversation last night. I said, you know, I love football and I watch it every Sunday, but when I have a kid, I don't think I want my kid playing football.
No.
I mean, and hockey's not quite the same thing because it's not on every single play, but you got to be really, I mean.
Now, the truth is about hockey, guys, is you can be a hockey player who completely avoids contact. You can if you want to, for the most part. You can control that.
Your head isn't getting bashed in on every single play.
Right.
It's not. I mean, there's the incidents that happen. Let's move on to Sidney Crosby and the alleged Slewfoot
gate.
Yeah, Slewfoot gate. I hate gates. Too many gates at this point.
Bill Gates? Second richest guy in the world.
Well, didn't say anything about Bill Gates.
Who's number one now?
Gate.
That guy on Larry King last night.
No, Mike Gates Tyson? Is still number one.
No, but it's
while Mike Tyson was out of it, his 250 birds or whatever, 25,000 birds.
Yeah.
The better interview was the one the day before with Vladimir Putin on Larry King. It was so awkward. We'll talk about it later on.
Putin or Poutine, Drew?
What part of the segment? What part of the show are we talking about the Vladimir Putin interview? Did you slot that into the show plan?
No, I didn't.
I'm looking for it here.
Bristol Palin's coming up.
Sidney Crosby, was it a slew foot?
No. It could have looked like it. I can understand why people thought it might have been, but it wasn't. If you check the video, it was him and Ryan Callahan. They battled. I thought it was more from the top than the bottom. Ovechkin's slew foot in Atlanta last year, 2 years ago, was way worse.
The thing about it, first of all, I mean, it was two guys fighting, and they seemed to just get tangled up. And I don't think Crosby intentionally tried to take his feet out from under him. I think they were, like you said, jostling up top, and that's sort of. And then their actions with each other's bodies on the top is what resulted in their legs sort of getting tangled up. Mm-hmm. How did Callahan get a penalty on the play?
That's weird. But
Drew, we reviewed it in the Illegal Curve Game Center. Richie made the call. It wasn't a slew foot.
We have a game center. I obviously wasn't invited to it.
Brandon Dubinsky actually made comments. Crosby being not liking him and kind of alluding to the fact he's a dirty player. And Brandon Dubinsky is just mad that he can't hold Sidney Crosby's jockstrap.
Well, yeah, I'm like Brandon Dubinsky, stop talking.
That was Joe Giuno.
You don't get to talk about Sidney Crosby. Yeah.
Who's
lying
was that? Joe Giuno, Timo Solani, Joe Giuno, right?
Yeah, remember Joey Juno, rocket scientist. Him at 132 that year, or 125.
Yeah, he was a rocket scientist, though.
That's right.
I know. Very interesting.
He's actually a rocket scientist?
Yeah, he actually
that's
was.
A real profession to actually be a rocket scientist?
Yeah. I had a former cousin who was a rocket scientist.
What do they do, like engineer rockets? What does a rocket scientist actually do?
We'll let you Wikipedia that, and we'll come back and discuss it.
All right.
When we come back after the break, Adrian Dater of the Denver Post. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Hockey show this Saturday morning, 11 o'clock, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. We heard from Howard Bloom from Sports Business News in the first hour, and now we're pleased to be joined on the line live from Tampa Bay, Florida, from the Denver Post, Adrian Dater. Adrian, welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Well, good to be with you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Adrian. Adrian, let's start with the two moves the Avs made this past week. They acquired Matt Hunwick from the Bruins in exchange for Colby Cohen, and then in the sort of the bigger of the two names, they acquired Thomas Fleischmann from the Capitals in exchange for Scott Hannon. What were your thoughts on the two trades made by the Avs?
I think we're a little surprised that the Avalanche traded a pretty good prospect that they did, Colby Cohen for Matt Hunwick, when they kind of have a lot of speed, puck-moving defensemen as it was, you thought, and maybe they want to hold on to some big size and strength for the future that Cohen had. But, I think maybe they just didn't want to wait too long for Cohen, I guess, and so they got Cohen Hunwick. I think he's a pretty good player. That's a bit of a strange one, but I think people saw the other kind of deal coming. I mean, they needed a forward. They needed to get a guy in there who play left side on a top kind of guy. And they've got Peter Mueller out. They've got TJ Gagliardi out still. They've got Chris Stewart out now. So they needed a forward. And, Fleischmann is a bit of a risk, I think. But, I think it's a pretty good risk to take for a guy like Scott Hannon. When that's all it costs you. I mean, he's a a pretty solid veteran and did some good things for the Avs. I think he was always a little bit, people are always a little bit underwhelmed by his play here. Just, and the contract he signed didn't help things. So the perception was that he was going to be a pretty star player, and he's more of an average guy here. So
you had
to be able to flip him for a guy like Fleischman is a pretty good gamble, I think.
Yeah, that great line, Adrian, in your article about how he, you know, is a, more of a ham and egg player coming at a filet mignon price, which...
Well, that's maybe a little too trite, but it's kind of what we thought here.
Yeah.
It's, you know, $4.5 million a year, you're expecting a little bit more than how Scott Hannon provided, frankly. So that's just, you know, so it's time to move on.
You know, Fleischman has a lot of offensive talent, Adrian, and something, you know, the Avs can boost a little bit of scoring here. Can you give us, you know, your take and what you've heard in terms of the possibility of Fleischman re-signing because he's a pending UFA at season's end?
No, I don't think there's anything to be learned right now on that. It's he's going to have to just prove himself here first again and play well before they even think about re-signing him, I think, especially to a big ticket. But, you know, the fact is, a couple of things could hinge on that, though. I mean, if Peter Mueller is gone for, let's say, forever with his problems with concussions, you know, they're going to need a forward, so that could enhance his bargaining power a little bit. But otherwise, I think he's just going to have to keep paying his dues and get his career back on track a little bit. And he's playing with Matt Duchene right now on a line. I think he's got a good shot at doing that.
Adrian, first of all, I want to say that I've read your book, Blood Feud, and I really enjoyed it.
Thank you.
Do you want to? Do you think there's any more trades coming as far as veteran players go for the Avalanche?
Well, I mean, it could be. I mean, I don't think that's definitely not. You know, a lot of things depend on how healthy they get back by the deadline, and obviously if they're still in contention. But if they're a contending team, I think they could do a lot of things because they still have the lowest payroll in the league, I believe. So, I mean, they've got plenty of cap room to bring someone in on a rental if they wanted. They don't want to give up a lot of, they don't do business like they used to. So, they do not give up, tons of draft picks that, for a cheap rental anymore. I mean, it was surprising to me that they gave up Cohen, but they did get a young defenseman in return. It used to be, you know, this is the Avalanche team that gave up two or three, four picks for a Theo Fleury or a Ray Bourque, those days are pretty much over.
Yeah, there's not going to be a Solani Korea coming, right?
No, that's right. So they've had mixed success on the free agent market, but their new modus operandi is to just get young, fast, and hopefully do it at a reasonable cost. That's what they want now.
Yeah, they don't trade draft picks like they used to, and they don't draw crowds like they used to either.
No, they don't. They don't. It's been a big disappointment in Denver. I mean, it's really been bad, the attendance, and nobody can really figure it all out either. I mean, you know, people forget they made the playoffs last year. They made the playoffs 2 years ago. They made it to the second round, or 3 years ago, almost. The only year they didn't make the playoffs was that one bad year in 2009-10. But, you know, I mean, so, you know, fans desert you over one bad year. I mean, it's kind of surprising that the Avs fans have just been so fickle like that. It hasn't really reflected well on him, I don't think, either.
Yeah, we actually spent some time trying to figure it out on air a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And, you know,
said, good luck. When you figure it out, let me know.
Yeah. Well, that's what we said, you know, exactly. We could have put a finger on it anyways. We're joined by Adrian Dater of the Denver Post here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Adrian, one of the really bright young players on the Avs, at least to start the season and really going forward, is going to be Chris Stewart. He broke his hand in a fight last week or a couple weeks ago. What was the organizational view, their opinion about, you know, having him drop the gloves and then having this be a result?
Well, I think they're going to tell him to lessen the fighting next time. You know, nobody's chewing him out, I don't think, based on what he did. He's standing up for teammate, he fought, nothing can happen, blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, Stewart should have been smarter there. He was fighting Kyle Brodziak in a game that they're up by 2 goals, and geez, he'd already won the fight basically with about 7 or 8 right hands, and then he decides to swing lefty and start throwing lefty punches, and then he breaks his finger on the left hand. So now, you know, it just was just too much that he did. He should have just let it go. If he's going to fight, he should know that, look, I'm going to be real careful here. I'm not going to hit a guy's helmet. I'm important to this team. I need to be in the lineup, not to fight. And so they're going to miss him. I mean, they've already missed him. They missed him last night in Carolina. They're missing that net presence. And I think with him in the lineup last night, I think they find a way to win that game last night instead of get a 2-1 OT loss.
The year you referred to, in terms of the Avalanche, having an off year, not making the playoffs, they did obviously, reap the benefits of drafting Matt Duchene. How have you viewed his progression in his second season?
I think he's been fine. I mean, there's a little bit of a concern earlier when he had a couple bad games and he got benched in a lot of the second period one game, but he's fine. He just works too hard and wants to succeed too much to go into a long slump. His points on average are higher than they were last year, and he didn't play great last night. He still has occasionally just a night where you don't notice him as much. So eventually if he wants to be considered on a level with Joe Sakic, mm-hmm. like his hero, obviously that's a pretty high goal to be, but he's going to have to develop that every night consistency better. I think he's been fine. He's
going to
be fine.
Adrian, we wanted to ask you about a guy who's emerging as a bona fide Calder candidate, and that's Kevin Shattenkirk. He's got 12 points now in 14 games, 0-7 first rounder. How surprised are people in Denver with how well he's playing?
Well, I think everybody's a little surprised, even Shattenkirk. I mean, I just talked to the kid about it half an hour ago, He's rolling with it right now. He's got an 8-game point streak, and it's all going good. And not only that, he's playing well on his own end too. It's not just that he's gunning points at the other end and sloppy in his own end. He's been good there too. So
he looked like Scotty Niedermayer yesterday against Carolina. Yeah, I mean, the way he's going end to end, it's unreal.
I know it. He does. I mean, he's starting to look a little scarier with it in that regard. Like, he takes a puck away from you, and he makes a little smart little pass, and off he goes. If he happens to have anything near a Niedermayer, he'll be very, 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 very happy.
I think John Michael Lyles, too, we've talked about this the last few weeks. John Michael Lyles looks like a new man for the Avalanche this year, too.
Yeah, had a bad game last night, but definitely had a bounce back year, and he's really played well. I mean, he's been just terrific, really. So that's a good thing to see because a lot of people are starting to give up on him, and maybe me included. And he's come back and shut us all up this year.
Adrian Dater of the Denver Post, thanks very much for joining us this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Enjoy the game in Tampa tonight.
Okay, guys. Take care.
Thanks, Adrian.
Thank you.
Take care. Adrian was as stumped as we are about the Avs and their attendance issues. And it's unfortunate because that's a team that should be – that's a good young team.
There's a lot of young pieces there, Drew. You talk about –
there's a lot of building blocks there.
Stasny and Stewart and Duchene and Shattenkirk in the back end. And Kaminsky's a beautiful skater. And even Lyles isn't that old. And you have a lot of pieces there. And the Gagliardi's when he's healthy. We didn't even
talk about Craig Anderson, Richie. I mean, Craig Anderson has been giving them –
He's been injured.
From last year,
he's been incredible.
So dynamite.
Remember last year how good the Avalanche started? Craig Anderson was at shutouts left and right. And I mean, I wouldn't want to play the Colorado Avalanche. If you're a fourth or fifth seed, a sixth seed, if Colorado ends up in sixth, you don't want to be playing Colorado in the playoffs, do you?
Probably not. I mean, they have a lot of young talent, and they're putting it together already quite quickly.
Yeah,
so you never know.
Take a little bit longer.
They gave San Jose a good battle last year in the first round.
The A's back, Drew.
It was a battle, Drew. I wouldn't say it was a good battle.
Well, given that they weren't expected to be anywhere near the playoffs.
For them, the season was an absolute, total. Unqualified success. The truth is that in all those games against Colorado, they were thoroughly dominated on the score sheet and on the shot sheet, and on the scoring chance sheet. So, I mean, Craig Anderson last year was their saving grace. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, with all their young talent, they're going to keep getting better.
Yeah, that's just it. I mean, this is a team that's on the uprise, and hopefully the attendance will also be on an upswing. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, 6 things we learned this week. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:15 Saturday morning here in Sports Radio 1290 here in Winnipeg. We're actually, Ezzy, are you going to release your new power rankings of Winnipeg popularity later on this week? Is that what I heard?
I don't know, but I mean, I would have no problem, Tim, if we played just the Black Keys and the Black Crows. Those are like two of my favorite bands.
So the Black Keys and the Black Crows might occupy a couple top two spots in the Winnipeg popularity ranking.
No, but I mean, we were talking about that, but obviously, my boy Richie P is not always going to be number one. He can't be knocked off.
We do encourage anybody that wants to follow Ezzy on Facebook, if you ever want to be thoroughly entertained, it is follow Ezzy on Facebook.
And Twitter.
That's right. You'll both be entertained there. Anyways, it's time to move on to the next segment. Richie, we'll start with you on six things this week. You think that if Randy Carlyle is fired by the Anaheim Ducks, his next landing spot will be the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I do, Drew. I think that there's a lot to talk about Randy Carlyle being fired by the Ducks, or fans wanting that at least. I don't necessarily think Bob Murray will do so, but if he does decide to make a change, you know, the truth is Bob Murray didn't make the decision there to hire him. So if he does decide to make a change, I think it'll probably be near season's end or at season's end. And if that is the case, I don't see Ron Wilson probably making the year in Toronto, and I think that's probably near season's end or at season's end he'll get released. And I'm just saying, if Anaheim does fire Randy Carlyle, I think there's a very, very, very significant possibility that Randy Carlyle ends up coaching Toronto, where he played with his guy Brian Burke, who hired him in Anaheim.
Was that three varies or four varies?
It's a very good question.
Oh, nice. Ezzy, the Ryan Smith, Jarrett Stoll, Justin Williams line is one of the most underrated second lines in hockey.
Yeah, it really is. And, I mean, you know, the LA Kings, they you know, in the last couple of weeks, they haven't been exactly the hottest team in the league, but they're still, you know, doing all right now. You know, they're sitting in that Pacific Division and, you know, kind of log jammed with the other teams there. There's only 3 points separating the two teams. But if you look at the numbers for this line right now, you've got Jarrett Stoll. He's got 18 points in 24 games. Justin Williams, 23 points in 24 games. And Ryan Smith, 15 points in 24 games. This is a solid second line for the LA Kings. And last year, Justin Williams, I think he only played, I have it written down here, he only played 44 games last year, 49 games, something like that.
Due to injuries, which he's
due to injuries.
Played with his entire career, yes. Really.
And he's at a point per game clip. And if you've watched the Kings this year, the Anze Kopitar, Dustin Brown line hasn't been hot. They're not exactly lighting up the league. Dustin Brown, I love Dustin Brown's game. He hits more than anybody, and you watch the Kings, and he's like a little wrecking ball out there, a little
draws
ball of
penalties
hate.
Too.
Draws penalties, but the LA Kings are not as deep as the Canucks, Red Wings, or Blackhawks right. At the forward position. And if you go down the lines, you've got the Wayne Simmonds and, you know, the Peter Harrelds, you know, buried on the third or fourth lines. They're not that hot, but that team, I think. Sorry, pardon me. The line of Smith, Stoll, and Williams, I don't think is getting talked about enough, because the Kings are trying to take the next step, and those are the veterans on the team who are going to get them there. And I think, led by Ryan Smith, that's
right.
Captain Canada there.
Right.
I mean, Ryan Smith, he's not, don't get me wrong, Ryan Smith is not a 90-point player anymore. He's more of a 65, 70-point player now.
But
he's playing very well.
Are the Kings ready to take a step to the upper echelon of the Western Conference? Or was the hype too much earlier in the year?
The hype's too much, Drew. They're finding a way right now. They could do some more scoring. I think that's an issue that they've had. That line, Ezzy, I think you've made a good point, has been very successful.
Yep.
There's a couple things that worry me about it. I think Ryan Smith really doesn't worry me. A good solid left winger up and down. You know, does know his role, performs offensively. My concerns are, one, Jarrett Stoll, who generally can't score 5-on-5, although he has to start this year. He's generally more of a face-off and second power play point kind of guy. Although if they can get him to perform this way, they're really in luck. And then Justin Williams, I love his game. Really, I always liked this game. But last year, in the playoffs, he was injured. You could tell he was awful. And he can't stay healthy. But if he can stay healthy, and Stoll doesn't have to perform at the level he's performing at now, but even a little bit less, I mean, you're exactly right. I mean, that's a line that really can do a lot in different parts of the game.
Richard, the Oilers, short and sweet, the Oilers need to draft a stud defenseman.
Yeah, you know, Drew, they're talking about it. You heard Pierre Maguire talking about, if the Oilers get another high pick, although Calgary's trying to fight them for that.
fight them for a futile record of incompetence.
The Oilers get another high pick, Drew. They have to look into drafting, you know, maybe that center or this or that. You know, they have Taylor Hall, they have Magnus Pjarvi, and they have Jordan Eberle, and we those guys get thrown down our throat, and I really like all three of their games, and they're fairly different, all three of them. The Oilers don't really have much in terms of defensemen in the system. I know they have Jeff Petrie, and some people talk about him, and Alex Plant, guys like that, but they want a stud defenseman here. And if I'm them, I'm not looking to draft another forward in the draft. I know that's what Pierre was talking about, and we'll hear more about this as the season goes on and watch things.
Because they're certainly going to have a high draft pick.
That's right. They'll have a high draft pick, but the high draft pick, to me, 100% needs to go towards a defenseman. You can't keep abandoning, because the defense core they're throwing out right now is an insult to the forwards.
Well, and that's part of, I mean, especially when you have Tom Rennie as your head coach, he's just so, I mean, that's part of his, you know, they're playing so loose defensively.
And
Tom Rennie preaches defense more than anything.
It's a distinct lack of talent, Drew. I mean, your top two defensemen are Ryan Whitney and Tom Gilbert, and they both lack in terms of defensive ability. They can both move the puck, but they both lack in terms of defensive ability. And Tom Gilbert especially isn't as good as Ryan Whitney. Ryan Whitney's nothing to write home about. Then you have guys like Theo Peckham and Jim Vandermeer, you know, getting a regular shift, and you're in trouble. So you need to start drafting defensemen. And as you can see from the teams that made, you know, Chicago last year, they had a bunch of defensemen. All four of their top four defensemen are better than anybody on Edmonton right now. You got to draft to strength. You know, Philadelphia, the two teams last year who made the finals, you know, this is not for every season, but the two teams last year who made the finals had the two best defenses in my mind in the entire National Hockey League.
You know, I got to talk about, you mentioned Theo Peckham. I got to talk about a very, very quickly go on a bit of a sidebar here. I love Don Cherry as much as anybody else does. I love Coach's Corner. I watch it every week. And, you know, part of Don's shtick is to, you know, screw up a player's name and everything.
Yeah.
Last week, he screwed up Theo Peckham's first name and last name.
What did he call him?
Something like, he told him, oh, we can't call you Theo anymore. He called him something else, because there's only one Theo. And then he called him Peckman the entire interview, the entire time. Don, I love you. At least get one of the guy's names right. That's all, I'm sure that's all his family's asking.
Canadian name, too.
I know. It's a perfect name. It's not a difficult name, but, you know, he was calling him Teddy Peckman, I think, is what he was calling him. I'm like, no, Don, no, that's not even close to right.
Sounds like a good name for, like, a British gangster film.
My favorite is Jack Martin. That's my favorite.
Jack Martin?
That's what he calls Jack
what about
Martin.
Last year in the playoffs when Montreal went on the run and he was calling him Yaroslav Havlak?
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, at least he got the first name right. He can get, as long as Don gets half your name right, you're doing okay for yourself.
The fact that Don Cherry is saying your name, you should be proud of.
Well, no, I'm sure Teddy Peckman was very happy, but I don't know how happy Theo Peckham was.
Good point.
Yeah, you know, that's all I was saying. I said it on Twitter, and people were like, have you not seen Don Cherry before? That's what he does. That's my point. Ezzy, when New York Rangers forward Sean Avery keeps his mouth shut and focuses on playing hockey, he is a solid hockey player who can contribute offensively.
He really is a pretty good hockey player, and people forget that he did score in junior, and he has scored 15 goals twice, and... You know, the unfortunate thing is that Avery loves to goad players and loves to chirp. But Sean Avery, you know, I thought he had maybe the best game of his career against the Islanders. He had three assists playing with Eric Christensen and Gabrick. And he didn't look out of place. He was keeping up with those guys. And you know what I love about Avery this year is that Tortorella is playing him. Tortorella, he's in Tortorella's good books. And
right,
you know, the Rangers beat the Islanders 2-0 yesterday, and you know Avery was, you know, I didn't watch the game, but you know apparently John Sim fired a puck before the game at him. But you know when Avery, was in the penalty box, I just want to read a quote that you know Tortorella said here when Avery was in the box. Listen, Sean was effective. When we lose him the way he's playing right now, it hurts him and it hurts the team. But I think Sean knows that. He bounced back and had some effective shifts. You know, I think Sean Avery is going to be he's a key part of the team. He's not just, you know, the guy that
has to stay in control of himself, which has always been the big if with Sean.
Right. And you know, it's good for him because I mean, you know, the whole Dallas debacle and all the personal problems he was having. I know Sean Avery isn't really liked by a lot of people, but he is playing probably the best hockey we've seen out of him ever.
I'm confident he's not on Ladislav Smead's Christmas card list.
If Sean Avery would stick to play hockey, he never would have left Detroit. But his ego gets in the way.
You know,
Ezzy, I agree with you. I mean, his talent-wise, the guy is a good National Hockey League player. He's a pretty good skater. He can mix it up. His hands aren't great, but they're not terrible. They're certainly at least third line level.
I don't know if he'll get 15 this year. He's got a goal and he's got 11 assists this year. I mean, because he's got guys on New York that he can play with. If he plays with six with Gabrick or Christensen, or if he plays with Callahan, I mean.
Second on this team in assists with 12. And, you know, seventh on the team in points, but second on the team in assists. And he's already 103 penalty minutes.
And he's a he's a plus six right now.
103 penalty minutes after 27 games or whatever. Wow.
28 games, yeah. I mean, it's nuts. Richie, Tyler Bozak should be a number one forward for the Leafs, as he's way better than Nazem Kadri.
Well, I was saying that, Drew, in response to, you know, the move of Kadri to center, and that was midweek, and he's already been demoted to the fourth line. And they're not even handling him right.
He's now a power play specialist for the Leafs.
Now they're making Phil Kessel the center after he requested that. Again, that wouldn't be news anywhere else but in Toronto. Under the microscope, that is news. If you're going to have Tyler Bozak on the team, I realize he hasn't been great so far. I really like the way he creates plays, though. He's a good passer. Give him more time. If you're going to play him on the team, don't play him on the third line. You know, to me, you'd play him on the first line, and for whatever reason, you put Kadri up there for two games. Those are two wasted games. I'm sorry. Like, I don't have as much of an issue with Ron Wilson as some other people do, but Nazem Kadri shouldn't be anywhere near your first line, especially when you have Bozak on the roster. And Bozak creates some chances. He might not score, but he creates some chances.
Well, it's like we've been saying, we talked about it earlier this year when they called up Kadri. You know, there's no team in the NHL that sets up their young players to fail quite as consistently and quite as well as the Leafs do.
See Luke Shen.
Yeah. Ezzy, the Edmonton Oilers may be in last place in the Western Conference, but Taylor Hall, Magnus Parvi, and Jordan Eberle had their best two games of the season this week and demonstrated that they all deserve to be in the NHL right now.
They really did, and obviously, you know, Parvi especially hasn't done very well, but, you know, Tom Rennie's putting Jordan Eberle and Taylor Hall out there in key situations at the end of games, and you know they really stepped it up this week. You know they're not anywhere close to being where they want to be, but Taylor Hall and Jordan Eberle finally both look like they're getting a little bit comfortable and playing in the NHL, and it's good to see, you know, because both of them are eventually going to be first line star players in the NHL, and it's just a matter of time, right? And it's good. It's good to see. It's good for everyone. It's good for the city of Edmonton because they haven't had a lot to cheer about lately. So,
That's not going to change anytime soon.
And that's not a reference. Not a reference to the Eskimos at all.
Well, you know what? For me, you know, great road trip for the Oilers. I would not be surprised to see them stink it up on home ice tonight.
Young team, learning curves, Drew.
I know, and that's what it boils down to. Lots of confidence. Although, I mean, how much can you take out of beating the Leafs and the Senators?
Good point.
I mean, the Habs, fine. That's legit. But, you know, well, that was an overtime game, but everything. But, good for them. Look, they had to win the game. Good for them. Yeah. But I bet you they stink it up on home ice against St. Louis tonight.
I don't know about that. I don't know if they'll stink it up. They might not win. But
it's hard to get blown up by a team that can't score.
Well, if any team could do it, I bet you it'd be the Oilers. Anyways, let's go to break. When we come back, what do we have when we come back? We have On the Beat. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 11:30 Saturday morning. We've heard from Howard Bloom of Sports Business News and Adrian Dater of the Denver Post so far in the show. It's time for our next segment. Okay. Apparently it's time for our next segment, 16, On the Beat, where we go around the beat to talk about what is going on with our NHL different beat writers throughout the league and what they have to say so far. Well, let's start this Saturday morning in the New York Islanders organization.
You like this one, Drew?
I like this article. It came out of the New York Times earlier this week.
Talking about this article for the last 3 days,
Drew. I thought it was
keep emailing us the same article. I mean, go out the first time.
I only emailed it to you guys once.
You need to chill a little bit.
Ezzy. It comes out of the New York Times.
The reason why I'm telling you to chill is because all of this bad news, I don't like all of this bad news that's coming to, out of New York about the Islanders. I want the Islanders to do well, but there's so many things going wrong.
I'm not the one making up the news.
I know, but you were emailing this article. You were so excited about this article in the New York Times. It is a good article.
The
news in the article is not good because it's not good. The Islanders are a storied franchise. It's not good.
This isn't the Pollyanna hockey show, Ezzy. This is a real life hockey show. That's right. Talks about all the bad stuff that's going on in the NHL amongst the franchises.
Thank you
and
for keeping
Islanders
me grounded.
And the Islanders
are
an example of a bad franchise right now. I mean, it's an article out of the New York Times which really lists in excruciating detail all of the bad decisions and the bad news surrounding the New York Islanders franchise right now.
Give us
true or false, the Islanders are still paying for Alexei Yashin's contract. True.
I mean, the reason why the Islanders are paying for Alexei Yashin and, I believe... And Brendan Witt is just so they can meet the salary floor in the NHL. They're paying so little in salary that if it wasn't for those two guys, they would be in violation of the NHL salary
cap. Give us a quick review of what the article sums up in terms of a couple of terrible decisions that they've made. Because believe me, there's more than a couple to choose from.
Well, of course, we've talked about their issues in terms of getting a new arena. The Nassau County Coliseum is outdated and is inappropriate for a professional sports team at this point in time. We've talked about it before. The New York Islanders radio games are broadcast on the Hofstra University radio network. The only thing anybody knows about Hofstra University is that Wayne Chrebet, the former receiver from the New York Jets, used to play there. And if you're a professional hockey franchise, you certainly shouldn't be broadcasting your games on Hofstra Radio University.
Didn't Speedy Claxton play there from the Philadelphia 76ers for a brief time during 2003-2004 season?
I don't know.
Let's check the alumni.
Okay, we'll check on the. We'll check on Speedy.
No, Drew, it's a joke though, and I'm you know making light of it. It's a joke. You can't have a National Hockey League franchise broadcasting their games on university radio. That's an insult to the fans, an insult to the league. I mean, I'm actually surprised Gary Bettman even let that happen. But I mean, I guess they have no alternatives at this point.
But more importantly, Richie, Charles Wong wants the Islanders to play in a lighthouse.
No, it's a lighthouse. It's the Lighthouse Project. This has been what's the ongoing dispute. Charles Wang, the owner of the Islanders, has been pushing for this, what he calls this Lighthouse Project. It's a $3.8 billion plan to get a new arena. It's actually just to refurbish the arena. It's not to get to build a whole new arena. Condo developments, homes, offices, things like that.
I'm sorry, but you know what? $3.8 billion is going to take a lot of money from the Long Island, and you know, it's obviously civic money, and it's going to be some state money. You're going to let a guy who can't even run this team to win 30 games a year, the guy can't run an NHL franchise, you're going to say, no, you know what? Oh, that's a good plan, guy who can't run an NHL franchise, who's run into the ground for 10 years. I'm going to take your plan and then throw all of the state money and city money into the ground. What politician in their right mind will listen to this guy?
The guys in Glendale, Arizona, for one.
Well, look what happened.
I know.
Well, it's funny, Drew, and in this New York Times article later, you know, it's a long article. Mm-hmm. You're all right, Richie. It is a good article.
If you go to illegalcurve.com and click on the links, you can read the article there.
And you know, if you read the article, you'll see that they mentioned that the Islanders' value has gone down 20% in the last 10 years. That's terrible.
Well,
that is awful.
You have the 2000. You have the former first round draft pick who was just sent back down to the minors. That's Josh Bailey, the first round draft pick in 2008.
Sent down,
you know, not a shock that he hasn't developed as you want. You've been playing him with ECHL talent for the past 2 years,
and you drafted him high, Drew. You drafted him higher than people had him expected to go, and then you put him right into the NHL and put a pressure on him. It's
so
stupid.
Shockingly, you reach for a guy, and then you know. You know, it's just so many. I mean, you know, Robert Nielsen, the 2003 first round draft pick of the Islanders, you know, took him before Zach Parise, lasted 2 years before he was traded to, part of 1 year before he was traded to Edmonton. Was that in the Ryan Smith deal?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I mean, the best one, and I couldn't believe it when I read this one, has to do with the story of Cody Rosen. Cody Rosen was the Islanders' seventh round pick this past year. He's a goaltender from Clarkson University, so he's from a small, you know, college in the U.S. that plays hockey. Mm-hmm. He played one period of college hockey last year and was a seventh-round pick. Played one period. He allowed 3 goals. The team, he was even shocked. The guy, Cody Rosen, admitted, why was I drafted? I don't know why I was drafted. The reason why he was drafted, apparently, general manager Garth Snow, you know, a neophyte general manager who had no prior front office experience, Cody Rosen reminded Garth Snow a lot of Garth Snow.
There's one issue with that. Garth Snow,
well, if that isn't narcissistic, I don't know what is.
Yeah, Garth Snow wasn't very good. Why do you want somebody who reminds you of you playing for your team? Delusions of grandeur like right now?
Drew, if you could clone yourself, you would, though, right?
If I could clone myself, yeah, but I wouldn't sign myself. I wouldn't draft myself to play hockey. I've seen myself play hockey. It's awful.
I would draft you if I were you.
It's an embarrassment to anything called hockey, the way I play it, and that's why I'm not no longer playing in the NHL.
I mean, it has
no longer as
NHL.
If I ever was.
You know, in Garth Snow's defense, the general managers in the NHL have been known to make weird seventh and eighth and ninth round draft picks.
It seems more dated though to me that like he played in the. He's making picks like that in the NHL, and then he was hired without any experience. Very much like the 1970s and 80s, the guy's just going up, right? You know, right from players to managers. And again, Charles Wang has showed absolutely no ability to determine who's, you know, to have a guy run his organization properly. And maybe he's the problem. Maybe other guys are the problem. Who knows? Maybe there's just a lot of issues.
Well,
there.
Richie, and I mean, remember when Garth Snow was hired as the GM? They talk. He got his master's in business, and Charles Wong likes to do things a little bit unorthodox. And
so, are they going to hire our buddy Neil as the new general manager because he's got his master's in business administration?
He hasn't got it quite yet, Drew. He's working on it as we speak. He's in Washington making big moves. But
just to let you know, in all of the seasons in the National Hockey League, Garth Snow had one season where he had a save percentage over .902. Just to let you know. So if the guy reminds him, sorry, .903. If the guy reminds himself that much. If the guy reminds him that much of himself, we don't have much to look forward to.
I mean, Cody, like when the player himself is admitting, I don't know why I was drafted.
Drew, that's amazing.
I've done articles before on Hockey Perspectives about the value of draft picks, and seventh round draft picks aren't valuable really at all. The truth is, they're basically interchangeable with free agency. But the difference is if there's a free agent out there, you have to compete with every single team for him. So it still has a value of being able to have priority. And to be able to waste picks like that just to me seems completely and totally. No, Drew, not only a slap in the face to your fans, but a slap into the face of the scouts who spend every single night on the road.
And well, you're they have a small scouting department in the NHL also.
And you're picking a guy based on the fact that he looks like you when you play one period. First of all, how would you know he looks like you if he's only played one period? Were you even at that game?
Might have a blog or something. I don't know.
He's got a Facebook page. Yeah. That, you know, he looks like Garth Snow. Moving to Toronto, the Globe and Mail, you know, and all, of course, all Toronto media, of course, did it, had a an article this past week about Brian Burke's two-year anniversary as general manager of the Toronto Maple Leafs. You know, Burke, you know, in the article, talked about a lot of the positive things that you know, he has seen happen to the Leafs organization since he's been there. I'll throw it open. Name one.
They signed Bozak.
Gustafson was nice.
Yeah, and Hanson. Those
good
three
moves.
Guys just for nothing. It cost them just money. I mean, those are positive moves, Drew. There's been a lot of mistakes, obviously. Not trading Thomas Cabrelle is a mistake. Trading for Diamfanov is an upgrade on what they had, but he's not great. So, yeah, I mean, you know, that's probably a positive compared to what they had. You know, Komisarek was a mistake. There's been a lot of mistakes. So, yeah,
Boschman, a lot of people didn't like the Boschman deal. But let's be honest, though. I mean, I'm gonna say this right now. The Phil Kessel trade was the worst trade in the history of hockey.
I'm going that far.
I'm gonna go that far. I know it's early, but
Ezzy, Timu for Tverdovsky and Kilgar.
Drew, say this though.
Can't get nostalgic though.
Say this though. No,
you said the history of hockey.
Hold on. No. Say this. If Tyler Seguin is the and turns into the superstar people think he is, and then this next pick is top five, and they get a Ryan Nugent Hopkins, and they have those two guys, Drew, it might be.
Drew, Phil Kessel, they traded for Phil Kessel because they thought Phil Kessel would get them 100 points. They didn't trade Phil Kessel to play like he's playing now.
That's right.
They can say whatever they want about Phil Kessel. He's not playing well enough to justify that trade, Drew.
Quick, get this last article in here, Drew, because it's a good one.
Yeah, it's an important one. It comes out of the Buffalo News, and it talks about the life and times of you know, famed hockey writer Jim Kelly. Jim Kelly passed away earlier this week after a bout with pancreatic cancer. You know, really the accolades poured in for him throughout the week from everyone in the hockey world and outside of the hockey world. Anybody who was a sports writer knew something about Jim Kelly. Just a pro's pro, a professional to the end.
I recommend that everybody go online, go to the Buffalo News, and Jerry Sullivan wrote a terrific article.
Go to illegalcurve.com. The article will be there.
Michael put it up there on the website because Jerry Sullivan wrote a terrific article about Jim Kelly. Also, a terrific article is written in the Globe and Mail by Eric Tahachik, a friend of his. I spoke to him earlier. I told him how much I enjoyed the article in terms of how it was touching. So it was two great articles. And a guy who made it really, I'm going to talk about it. Give away a little hint of my cheer here. So, but these articles really are a testament to who Jim Kelly was, and are certainly worth 5 to 10 minutes of your time.
It really was a great read. It's just that simple. Our condolences, of course, go out to the Kelly family over this loss. When we come back, we'll have rapid fire, one final segment, cheers and jeers. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on Sports Radio 1290. And that's the name of the segment. As is customary, the NHL has released the results thus far as it relates to All-Star voting as selected by the fans. Carey Price of the Montreal Canadiens leads all goaltenders, despite being a write-in candidate and not being on the original ballot. If the NHL insists on turning the All-Star game into a popularity contest, how is it possible they left the goaltender from the most popular franchise off of the ballot?
Maybe because somebody was sleeping, I don't know.
Listen to Ezra before the season.
I mean, let's get it. I have to get something off my chest right off the bat. I did predict that Carey Price would be one of the most disappointing, no, the most disappointing goalie in the NHL. And I was really wrong about that. And the funny thing is, I defended Carey Price last year, all throughout last year when we were on Kick, and we talked about Carey Price, and he was doing bad, and Halak, emerged as the number one goaltender. Me, Richie, we defended him. We both defended him.
I was the head of the fan club.
I didn't see Richie jumping off
the
bandwagon.
The only reason why I said he was going to be disappointed is because I thought the Habs would regress, and not necessarily, that Price would be have a bad year. Anyways, it was a poor decision, okay? I'm not gonna make excuses, but I think they screwed up here, Drew. I think that he should have been included on the All-Star ballot.
And, well,
and right now, I'm gonna say that he is the quarter point Vezina guy.
You know, if you look at the garbage,
he's played that well.
If you look at the garbage players that the NHL insists on including on that All-Star ballot, it's inconceivable that they could leave Carey Price off of it.
Well, I want to give a shout out to the 6-year-old who put the ballot together.
You just by coloring,
yeah.
Sort of
well, that's just
connect the dots, something like that. You know, it had to be something that. That's the only logical explanation.
Doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make a lick of sense. We have reached the annual time of the season in the NHL where franchises have to decide what to do with their young players who are eligible to play in the World Junior Championships. If a player has been playing with their NHL team throughout the season thus far, what can they possibly gain by going back and playing with predominantly junior players?
Well, Drew, I think a couple of things. I mean, if they're not getting enough ice time in the NHL and they can get an experience of winning, an experience of pressure competition, I think that's what the biggest thing, Drew. You know, if you're a youngster and you can get pressure, you can play in a pressure pack situation and learn, you know, a simulation basically of a playoff game, and you're really not being utilized that much on your NHL team. You know, for example, like the Braden Schenn situation here. You know, they send him out to Brandon, granted, but,
yep.
You know, he's going up and playing on the World Junior team, and it's going to be a great experience for him again. Hopefully he can win and you can get that experience and you can look back on it, and it's probably more valuable than 10 NHL games, especially if it's going to ruin a year of your entry level deal for the team.
Yeah, well, you know, just quickly here, I think you're right. I think what a player can gain from leaving the NHL to play in the World Junior Championship is increased playing time and the part, you know, and the chance to be part of a winning championship. Really quickly here, I want to you know, congratulate the three Manitoba players who were invited to the to Team Canada camp: Cody Eakin, Washington Capitals draft pick Quinton Howden, and Calvin Picard.
Nicely done.
Yeah.
Top officials with the Edmonton Oilers met with the mayor of Quebec City this week. Edmonton is desperate for a new arena, while Quebec City is desperate for an NHL team and a new arena. Is there anything more to make from this meeting, or is this a case of Oilers brass simply adding another layer of pressure to the city of Edmonton to try and get an arena deal completed?
It's all it is, politics. It's not a meeting to discuss how the arena is going to... The truth is, this is just politics. They're trying to pressure the city into, you know, moving forward here on this arena deal. Whether it happens or not is a good question, but that's all the meeting was. Edmonton's not ever leaving Edmonton. Oilers aren't leaving. But, I mean, this is something to say, hey, government, hey, we can, you know, we're a private organization. We can still do what we want here.
What I don't understand about the new arena debate sort of in Edmonton and in Quebec City is the price tags that they've attached to these new arenas. Yeah. You know, look, I mean, I think our arena cost here in downtown Winnipeg was relatively inexpensive as far as new arenas go.
I think it was about $130
million. Yeah, $135 million, something along those lines. You know, where are they coming up with these figures? $400 million, $500 million.
Yeah.
Why don't you just build a $600 zillion arena, for God's sakes? It doesn't make any
sense. That's not a real number, Drew, but...
Yeah, well, Drew, you're making up numbers now. I mean, come on.
But, I mean, I don't understand, like, what's wrong with 100, I mean...
No, I understand.
You are making a good point here. I mean, I think that, you know... They're thinking of the future of hockey arenas with, you know,
with what?
Food courts. No, I don't know.
With the future of hockey, with what? Robots bringing you food and feeding you throughout the game?
That would be so cool.
It's crazy, you know.
Wow.
I've been to some of these new stadiums.
Great idea.
And,
I mean, look, the nicest arena I think I've ever been to, probably the one that you've ever been to, and probably the one you've ever been to.
Bell Center.
University of North Dakota. The Ralph Engestad Arena.
Oh, for a college arena.
Yeah,
well, that's phenomenal.
There, I mean,
well, that was Richie. That was a $100 million arena.
Well, I mean, that money was.
I mean, look. It's a little bit of dirty money given the history of Ralph Engestad and everything that he demanded to get that arena. But in terms of aesthetics, it's the nicest looking
arena
out there.
Marble floors, leather
marble
seats.
Marble floors,
yeah,
leather.
I mean, I was in just a little sidebar here. Me and my sister actually. I went with my sister down to Grand Forks. A lot of Winnipeggers went down there for the 05.
I was there with you.
Was it 05?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I saw you. That's right.
That's right. Yeah. I think we
shared
a hot
dog.
Hey, at
least you're acknowledging that. Yeah. Last time he said mentioned you, you act like you didn't know what was going on.
When would I ever
last
stop
week,
as
remember,
Richie knows this in Grand Forks. But
I don't know what you're
talking about. In 05, Sidney Crosby was on that team.
Yeah, it was
me and my
team.
Sister drove down there, and we actually were staying at the Holiday Inn there in Grand Forks, and
that's
Sidney
nice.
Crosby walked by us, and he wasn't as big as I thought he was.
Really, he was 16.
Right.
You know, maybe probably not fully grown yet or something.
Well, he didn't grow that much, actually. Usually your typical male stops growing around 16 or 17, except
good
Dennis
point.
Rodman really
I'm still holding out hope that I'm going to break the 5'7", 5'8" barrier here any day now. I'm only 29 years old.
But that was a great tournament and a great arena. But
Sidney Crosby was named the top newsmaker in Canada by Maclean's magazine.
Good segue, boys.
Is this just a way for Maclean's to capitalize on the popularity of Crosby, or in your opinion, is Crosby really the top newsmaker in this country in 2010?
It's a second coming of Paul Henderson's goal. I mean, how
yes.
could he not be? How
really?
Could he not be?
Right.
Really? You think hockey, the top newsmaker in this country?
There's three big goals in the Canadian hockey
I'm
history.
Not talking about the top newsmaker in sports. I'm talking about the top newsmaker in the country.
Drew, you could make an argument that Sid, you know what? And Canadians, Canadians are humble people. I'd like to speak for the Canadian people. I'm Canadian. But that was a huge goal in Vancouver in overtime. That was one of the biggest moments in sports history,
now,
period.
As I understand, definition is a newsmaker. Now, there's people who do more important things in life. We all know that. But newsmaker, I mean, in terms of politics, I don't think anybody in the Canadian political landscape really, and that's usually politics or sports, isn't it, in terms of newsmaking. And, I mean, Sidney Crosby, there's three big goals in Canadian hockey history. It's Paul Henderson in 72, Lemieux in 87, and Crosby in 2010. And that's not newsmaking. We see those clips all the time. I mean, of course, that has to be, if it's going to be in that, in terms of that, you know, within the definition, then yes, I think it fits.
Sports transcends, okay?
You see,
that's the power to transcend.
Look, I mean, I love the goal as much as everybody else and everything else. I don't think an athlete should ever be the top newsmaker in a country in an entire year.
Drew, me and Richie disagree with that. We disagree with that.
I understand your premise, Drew, but you're talking about newsmaker. You know, I'm talking about effect on the country. You know, doctors obviously are going to be number one there every time, as they should be.
Well, then we should give them more credit. Anyways.
Okay, Dr. Mindell.
You can start calling me doctor anytime you want. I'm unlicensed. I'll operate out of my van. The Florida Panthers are holding their annual Hanukkah party on Tuesday night against the Colorado Avalanche. Happy Hanukkah, Richard. Happy Hanukkah, Ezra.
Thanks.
Happy Hanukkah, Michael Remus.
What about you? Leaving Tim out?
Well, Tim, I don't know. Happy Hanukkah. We'll have some latkes and we'll spin the dreidel after the show. Every ticket buyer will receive a complimentary Florida Panthers kippa/yarmulke, for those of you who don't know what a kippa is. In honor of this bizarre promotion, what is the most bizarre team promotion you have heard of?
I can't think of any at the top of my head. I mean, all the ones that I can think of, you know, come from baseball and
it doesn't matter. Well, equal opportunity.
Usually it's when they, you know, they give out, like, the bottles on nights where, like, a former player comes into and they just huck the bottles on the ice or things like that. Those are the ones that always get me going. You know, it's always the angry fans throw the promotional item on the ice or the field because they're, you know.
Yeah.
The episode of the
Simpsons.
The episode of The Simpsons when Whitey Herzog was hit by all the pretzels. Whitey Whackers. For the record, the answer has to be the night at the Winnipeg Arena. And you guys are a little younger than me, so you might not remember this.
True. I'm like 6 months younger than you.
When they gave out free tomatoes to everybody. Everybody that came into
That's
the arena
not
got
true.
A tomato.
That's not true.
Absolutely.
When was that?
This is in the 80s. It was tomato night.
They gave away tomatoes at the Winnipeg Arena.
Yeah, and then everybody threw the tomatoes on the ice, naturally. Because the Jets lost.
How's that not on YouTube?
Oh, I don't know. Look for it. Go Google tomato night at the Winnipeg Arena.
Why were they giving away tomatoes to promote... Like a grocery?
I don't know. Maybe tomato farmers of Canada.
I don't
know. The Columbus Blue Jackets are the latest team to debut a third jersey, given that NHL teams have been unable to make a third jersey that could remotely qualify as nice. Which third jersey in NHL history is the least ugly?
Least ugly? So what does that mean? Good looking?
Yeah. I like the Rangers Statue of Liberty. The white one.
You know what? I'm going to go with the Philly Flyers black alternate third jersey. I like that one. It was very simple. I liked it.
Okay, good. But we agree that most third jerseys are horrendous.
The worst of all time was the Anaheim Ducks and LA Kings jerseys in the mid-90s. Those were the worst.
When they were on Fox.
Other than that Ducks one recently, the Astro Day was pretty ugly.
Okay. Well, anyways, that's it for Rapid Fire. It's time to wrap up the show with our one final segment.
Cheers and jeers.
Ezzy, start. Cheers. Cheers.
Nice. I'm surprised that you're starting with me with the rapport that we've had so far, but I'm going to cheer Movember. It's over now, which isn't good, but... I thought Movember was lots of fun. You had a lot of Clutterbuck had his own mustache Twitter account called, it was at Clutterstash. I don't know if he's going to keep it going, but, I thought it was a lot of fun and, you know, there was a lot of good mustaches. Carey Price, you know, we were talking about him. He had a good little mustache, but it was lots of fun. Raised awareness, prostate cancer. So it was good.
I must say I'm a little disappointed you shaved because you had a fantastic lumberjack beard going on earlier this week.
It was a little bit of a lumberjack beard, but
you
got to shave it off.
I was worried. Why is he carrying an axe? But no, they raised him over $20 million. Amazing.
Yeah, I mean, so kudos to everybody who participated in Movember. But
they should have something for every month for every different type of cancer.
Let me just jump in here. A quick rant about Movember. If the point of growing a mustache was to raise money.
Yeah.
So if you're just growing a mustache and not raising money, you're a bit of a dick.
No. I disagree. You're still doing something. You're still taking part in it.
People knew that?
Donating money is important, but not everyone can.
My chair this week goes to Jim Kelly, and we should have a pancreatic cancer awareness month to raise money for something like him. Yep. Ambassador of the game, and we'll be missed.
No. I'm going to, I hate that we have to bring this up on air. My jeer this week is going to the lowlife, the scum, whoever broke into Pat Burns' family car at the funeral, stole all that memorabilia. You're the scum of the earth. It's just that simple, really, at that point in time. Anyways, that's it for Cheers and Jeers this week on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We do thank our two guests, Howard Bloom of Sports Business News and Adrian Dater of the Denver Post. We encourage you to follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Follow us on Facebook, IllegalCurve.com. You can check out the show on iTunes. You can download it, search for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, and you can go to our website, IllegalCurve.com. Until next Saturday morning here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the first faceoff in the NHL is 12 noon in Philadelphia.